Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
On the night of Friday, October 23, 2015, 18-year-old Ebby Stepik attended a party in Little Rock, Arkansas. The following evening, she texted her stepfather and said she had been sexually assaulted at the party and asked if he would go with her to the police. He said yes, but after that, she never contacted him again. Calls and texts from her family went unanswered until the next afternoon, when Ebby called her brother. She was disoriented, thinking she was outside his house, even though she wasn't. Her family frantically reported her missing and began searching. They had no idea that later that same day, her car would be found abandoned at a local park, but there was no sign of Ebby. Searches in and around that park continued for years with no answers. 2.5 years later, Ebby's body was found inside a drainage pipe that opened just feet away from where her car had been left behind. Now, nearly a decade later, her family, friends, and the Little Rock Police Department are still searching for the person or people responsible for ending Ebby's life. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Lavasser. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, Ebby Stepik, this case, it's a puzzling one. First off, there's clearly some scumbags involved in this case, whether they're responsible for Ebby's murder or they're responsible for something else, which we're going to get more into in this episode. They're out there right now, just walking the streets. No repercussions for their actions, and it really pisses me off, not only as a former police officer, not only as a father, but just as a human being. Based on the fact that Ebby's no longer with us, these people are not being held accountable, and it's not right. And we're going to discuss it a little bit, even though, unfortunately, there's probably not much we can do about that aspect at this point. There is something we can do about Ebby's murder, because there's no statute of limitations on murder, and we have Ebby's body. And we just got to connect the dots. I also wanted to mention that one of the researchers on this episode, Polly, has worked with Ebby's mother, Lori, for years. Lori does know about this episode and is glad that we're covering it. And I just want to thank you, Lori, for allowing me to cover your daughter's story and to share your message and let everyone know not only who she was in life, but what happened to her and what we can do moving forward. We have a lot of information to go over tonight. This is probably going to be one of our longest episodes, and I just want to make sure that I cover everything. So with that out of the way, let's dive into this week's case. Ebby Jane Stepik was born on March 31st, 1997 to her parents Lori and Peter. She was the middle child with an older brother named Trevor and a younger sister named Harris. Their family later expanded when Lori married Michael, bringing a stepbrother Ethan into their lives as well. Ebby was deeply loved by her family. Her mother, Lori, described her as a beloved daughter and sister who shared a close bond with everyone around her. By the summer of 2015, Ebby was 18 years old. She had her own car, worked two jobs, and had plans to become both a cosmetologist and a real estate agent. That fall, she transferred to Central High School to begin her senior year. According to Lori, Ebby started spending time with a new group of people, and they were not good influences. Her personality began to shift dramatically, and she started pushing back against the rules at home. Lori told Dateline, quote, "Ebby was really rebelling and fighting back and storming out. It was the polar opposite than the Ebby we knew. It was hard for all of us." As tensions grew at home, Lori and Michael gave Ebby an ultimatum. If she wanted to stay, she needed to be respectful or she needed to move out. Ebby chose to leave and started bouncing between staying with friends, her grandparents, and her older brother Trevor. But even after moving out, Ebby remained in close contact with Lori and Michael. She wanted more freedom, not a full cutoff. And she still relied on her parents for support and continued confiding in them about personal matters. On Friday, October 23rd, Ebby attended a party, and we don't know much about the party itself except that it was relatively small and there were at least four guys in attendance. It's unclear what time Ebby left or exactly what happened while she was there, but based on her communication afterward, it was obvious something traumatic occurred. After leaving the party, Ebby texted her boyfriend Eric and said that she had been raped. In an interview with Dr. Phil, Eric explained that prior to that night, things between them hadn't been great. They had been arguing a lot. Still, he told her he would always have her back, and he was there for her. And after their conversation, he let her come over, but it's unclear whether she stayed the night or where she went after that. The following morning, Ebby texted her friend Gage Fulton, and according to Crime Watch Daily, Gage later spoke to the family's private investigator, Monty Vickers, about that exact exchange. He said Ebby had written, quote, "I was hanging with some dudes last night and we smoked and I had sex with one of them and he effing recorded me, dude, like when I wasn't looking." Ebby didn't name anyone, but Gage said she was horrified and confused. When Vickers asked, quote, "Did she tell you she was raped?" Gage replied, quote, "She said she felt forced into it." He added, quote, "Her last text message to me is, quote, I am going to kill myself." Now, I want to point out that some sources have said Ebby was gang raped by several men, but according to Vickers, the family private investigator, quote, "There were four people that she said raped her. It was at a party. One of them had sex with her. The other three watched. One made a video." And that does seem to align with what Ebby told Gage the following morning, but it doesn't really diminish anything for me. I am of the mindset that if this actually happened the way Ebby described it, then all four men raped her because one man forcibly had sex with her while the other three watched. And that to me is a gang rape. Maybe they didn't all have intercourse with her, but they all contributed in some way and they could have stopped it. So from where I'm sitting right now, if you were to ask me about these four individuals, if this is exactly what happened, all four of them are rapists. I don't care what you say, that's how I feel. Now, after texting with Gage about this whole occurrence, Ebby spent time at her grandparents' house sleeping and watching TV. According to investigative journalist and podcaster Catherine Townsend of the Helen Gone podcast, Ebby also made two notable Google searches that same day. The first was about being recorded without her consent. The second was, quote, "how to file a police report." That evening, Ebby went out to dinner with her grandparents and they returned home around 8 p.m. Around that same time, she reached out to her stepfather, Michael, and told him about what had happened at the party. In her text messages to Michael, Ebby disclosed the sexual assault and said she wanted to file a report with the Little Rock Police Department. Michael was out to dinner with Lori at the time, but he told her he would go with her to the police station as soon as he was done. However, they didn't set a firm plan or where to meet. Now, some people have criticized Michael for this, not leaving dinner right away, but I want to point out that based on what I've gathered, Ebby did not want Lori knowing what was going on, and she knew that Michael was out to dinner with Lori, so to not raise any red flags or make Lori aware of it, Michael decided he would finish the dinner and then immediately go over there. So don't go too hard on Michael here. As a father, I agree with how he handled it. You know, in hindsight, maybe you would do things differently, but in that moment, he was honoring Ebby's wishes. So I'm okay with it. And after dinner, Michael did try to reach Ebby, but she didn't answer. So he immediately called the grandparents thinking she might be at their house, but she wasn't. They said that at around 8 p.m., Ebby had told them she was going to meet Michael and would be back later. Michael assumed that she might have gone straight to the police station, so he went there as well, but she wasn't there either. As hours passed, her family and friends tried calling her, but there was no response. No one heard from her until the next day, Sunday, October 25th, at around 5:30 p.m., when Ebby called her brother Trevor. Trevor asked her where she was, and Ebby told him she was in front of his house, but when Trevor stepped outside, there was no sign of her. He called her back, and this time, Ebby sounded disoriented. Trevor asked her again where she was, and she told him she didn't know, only that she was in her car. When he asked her where her car was, she still couldn't say. She then said, quote, "I'm f***ed up," and then hung up. Trevor immediately called the police and told them something was seriously wrong. He begged them to find his sister and her car, but according to Lori, officers labeled Ebby as a runaway and said they wouldn't be launching a search. Her family didn't believe for a second that she had run away. Ebby had never done that before, not even during the worst fights with her parents. So they started searching on their own, looking for Ebby and her silver 2003 Volkswagen Passat. Trevor also reached out to Ebby's boyfriend Eric to see if she might be with him, but she wasn't. Concerned, Eric called her right away, and according to him, she answered, but only for a second. In that brief moment, she didn't sound like herself. She sounded afraid. Then she hung up the phone and was never heard from again. We have a lot more to cover, including persons of interest and a shocking discovery. We'll be right back after this break. You ever go through something tough, maybe a breakup, burnout, or even that creeping anxiety that doesn't let you sleep at night and you're laying there thinking, I just wish I had someone to talk to who actually gets it. I've been there. I've seen how powerful therapy can be for friends, family, for the people close to me who are really struggling and needed help. But let's be honest, getting access to the right therapist can be a nightmare. You call around, people aren't taking new clients, they're not in your network, or it costs a fortune. That's where Rula comes in. Rula is changing the game. They make high-quality mental health care accessible and affordable. Most people pay only $15 a session, and they take most major insurance. You answer just a few questions, and you're matched with a licensed professional who meets your preferences, and you can be talking with someone as soon as the next day, and that's because Rula has over 15,000 therapists and psychiatrists in their network. And Rula doesn't just leave you hanging after that. They actually stay with you, checking in on your progress and making sure you're getting what you need out of therapy. Whether it's a therapist or even a psychiatrist to help with medication management, Rula's got you covered. So if you've been thinking about therapy, or even if this is the first time you're considering it, this is your sign. Thousands of people have already trusted Rula to support them on their journey toward better mental health and overall well-being. So head over to Rula.com/detective to get started today. After you sign up, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support this show by letting them know that I sent you. Once again, that's RULA.com/detective to take the first step towards better mental health today. You deserve quality care from someone who cares. All right, we're back, and the search for Ebby continued, but it would take several days before there was any real movement. Then on October 30th, police located her car at the Chalamont Park, which was a private neighborhood pool and a playground in West Little Rock. According to news reports, the car had been backed into a space in the park's rear parking lot, which could not be seen from the road. The gas tank was empty, the battery was dead, and the keys were still in the ignition in the on position, as if the car had been turned on until it ran out of gas. Private investigator Vickers later told Oxygen that the park security guard, Guy Hooper, had first spotted the empty car on the evening of October 25th. He and others contacted the police to report it multiple times, but no one came to recover the vehicle until October 30th. When it was finally searched, several of Ebby's personal belongings were found inside the vehicle, including her phone, wallet, and contact lenses, which were all located in the front seat. Her makeup was also scattered across the car. Some pieces were even broken. Now, to Lori, all of this was especially disturbing. She said Ebby would never leave those items behind. She asked, quote, "What kind of teen leaves their phone?" She also pointed out that without her contacts, Ebby wouldn't have been able to see. But the makeup stood out the most. Ebby spent nearly all her extra money on makeup, and she took great care of it. Seeing it broken and left behind confirmed Lori's worst fears. something terrible had happened. But according to the family, police still treated Ebby as a runaway. And they told Lori that Ebby would come home eventually, and obviously us sitting here now, we know that never happened. Roughly a week later, a family friend named Margie called 911. She had been out at Chalamont Park with her daughter searching for Ebby when she noticed a strong smell of decomposition coming from one of the drainage pipes. Law enforcement searched the area, but again, there was no sign of Ebby. Around the same time, police released a small update. They had found surveillance footage of Ebby's car driving along Cantrell Road in West Little Rock shortly after she last spoke with anyone on October 25th. Now, Cantrell is the main road that leads to Chalamont Park, which is the same park where Ebby's vehicle was found. But as far as I can tell, the police have never shared where exactly the car was seen on video or whether anyone was with her. And I do have a photo here. I'm assuming it's from that surveillance footage. And if it is, it's kind of a poor angle. It's from the rear of the vehicle. It's a distance away. It looks like it's been enhanced. What I can take from this photo is that it doesn't appear there's anyone in the back seat at this time, but I cannot see who's driving or if anyone is in the passenger seat. So I am hopeful there's more photos and there's more video from whatever they gathered, but unfortunately, we do not have that information at this time. And even after all this, according to Ebby's family, police continued to treat her disappearance as a runaway situation, which is absolutely ridiculous. And they were frustrated by the lack of urgency, which I think we can all understand. So her parents hired private investigator Monty Vickers to begin asking questions. And it didn't take long for him to put together a timeline and uncover serious gaps in the investigation. And Vickers quickly realized that key steps had been missed. Police hadn't reviewed Ebby's social media, nor had they interviewed several important people, including the security guard who found her car, her grandparents who last saw her, or even close friends who might have some insight into the sexual assault or any other things going on in Ebby's life. In an interview with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, Vickers said he spoke directly with the security guard, Guy Hooper, and what Hooper told him was significant, not just about what he found in the car on October 25th, but also about what he had seen in the days leading up to Ebby's disappearance. In fact, he had actually seen her three times. Hooper recalled seeing Ebby in the park with two young black men just days before she went missing. He said, quote, "It was late evening. I advised them all, everybody, to leave the park, which they did. Then a few days later, I ran into her again with another young black gentleman. This time they were in the back seat of the car, and the third time she was in the back with another couple of gentlemen." He told Vickers that one man had been present all three times, and according to Hooper, Ebby and this man had been, quote, "hugging and kissing back and forth." He described the man as being, quote, "about 5'6", 5'7", with, quote, "long dreads." Now, Hooper also said he previously had a video from the car showing Ebby meeting the man in the park, but by the time Vickers got to him, the video had been lost. Now, as far as what lost means, I don't really know. Was it manually deleted or did it just get written over as time passed? I would lean towards the latter. More than likely, they had a small DVR, and by the time Vickers got involved, the video had already been written over by new footage. I do want to point out one more thing about what Hooper had to say that I thought was interesting. If you take a second, if you're on YouTube, and you go back and you look at footage from the Dr. Phil show in 2022 that featured Ebby, Eric is on that show, and Eric does have dreads. Now, is this the same guy? I don't know, but I'm hoping that he was asked about it, and I'm also hoping that Guy was brought in by law enforcement and shown some photos to see if he positively identified Eric as the man who was there all three times. Now, if this is Eric, does that automatically mean that he's involved with what happened to Ebby? Not necessarily. But the fact that her vehicle was found at a location where he was with her on three separate occasions is extremely interesting, if for no other reason than the fact that how many people knew about this spot and had visited it before with Ebby. Something you would definitely want to look into. Investigator Vickers uncovered several additional concerns with the initial investigation, including the fact that while the young men who were at the party where Ebby said she was sexually assaulted were interviewed, they were only interviewed once. That was the extent of it. And their phones were never searched for any video evidence related to what Ebby reported, and after the first round of questioning, the men hired attorneys and were never interviewed again. I understand you have the right to an attorney, but by the way, even though you have a lawyer, it doesn't mean you're untouchable. Law enforcement still could have went at them again, still could have questioned them again in front of their attorneys. As far as a search warrant for the phones, that would have been more difficult without an official report. But it does seem like what they did here was more of a formality. And when these individuals didn't come out right away and just admit to everything, they basically said, well, I guess there's nothing to look into then. Oh, they got an attorney. We're washing our hands of this one. So, yeah, I agree with Investigator Vickers. Just a lot of mistakes in this one, from labeling it a runaway to not really thoroughly looking into what Ebby had disclosed to her family members and friends, people she trusted. It just seems like they didn't want any part of it. I hope I'm wrong, but at least the optics of it doesn't look good. Now, as far as Vickers is concerned, he kept digging. And while reviewing Ebby's phone, he found that on October 24th, the day before she disappeared, she had sent several messages to the guys at the party, including the one she accused of assault, and she threatened all of them to go to the police. Phone records from the 24th also showed two outgoing calls to the Little Rock Police Department. Each lasted about a minute, and Lori believes that those two calls represent her daughter's first and last attempts to report her assault. However, police later stated that they have no record of either call. So what are we to take from this? It could go either way. We've already pointed out multiple mistakes in this investigation by law enforcement. They didn't take it seriously. And so you have to ask the question, is this another example of that? On one hand, it could represent Ebby contemplating calling the police, making two calls, getting the dial tone or getting the ring, going through the tree, and then before actually connecting to the dispatcher or a police officer, she hung up. She just had a change of heart and decided not to go through with it. On the other hand, if these two calls represent Ebby calling and speaking with someone, and that person discouraging her from placing a report because they felt like it wouldn't go anywhere, if that turns out to be the case, then that individual or individuals need to be fired immediately, no questions asked. I really hope that's not the case, because if Ebby did call and attempt to file a report and she was turned away, that could have changed the outcome of this case, because instead of being at that park, she could have been at the station. Now, in addition to these two calls, the records also indicated that Ebby stopped using her phone after the evening of the 25th, which aligns with everything we know. We have the video surveillance of her car on the 25th. We have her calls stopping to her family on the 25th. And we have park security seeing her vacant car parked in the parking lot on the 25th. So if we're trying to narrow down to a small window of where and when did this happen to Ebby, what went down, I'm looking at the park on the night of the October 25th. That's where I'm at this point. And until someone tells me differently, that's where I'm moving forward. And that's also where I'm starting any type of reverse engineering that I try to do in this case. That's the day, October 25th. And while Vickers continued to conduct his own independent investigation, police conducted multiple searches around Little Rock. Many of those searches were at Shalimar Park, where Ebby's car was found and where a family friend had reported the smell of decomposition, but none of those searches turned up any positive results. Then in mid-2017, roughly 18 months after Ebby disappeared, police finally began treating the case with the seriousness it deserved. It was reclassified as a potential homicide and transferred to the homicide unit. Detective Tommy Hudson stepped in to lead the case, and Hudson had retired earlier that year but returned just months later to help with this investigation. In an interview with Dateline, he said that as soon as he began reviewing the files, it was clear that mistakes had been made early on, and he described it as, quote, a big mess to clean up, but he said he was committed to fixing it. As Hudson worked through the case, he had a gut feeling that he needed to go back to Shalimar Park. More specifically, he needed to take a look at the drainage pipes. He knew that if it had rained after Ebby went missing, it was possible that she, or at least evidence connected to her, had been washed into the drains. Detective Hudson then studied maps of the drainage system in Shalimar Park, and he discovered that one of the pipe's openings was located right next to the spot where Ebby's car was found. Obviously, that pipe needed to be searched more thoroughly, and what he would find would shock everyone. We're going to talk about it right after this break. When was the last time you needed to go to the doctor, but you pushed it off? Made the excuse, I'm too busy, it'll heal on its own, or I just don't know which doctor I need to go to. I think we've all been there. Booking a doctor's appointment can be frustrating, but thanks to ZocDoc, there's no reason to delay. They make it easy to find and book a top-rated doctor that's right for you. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment today. We're talking about booking in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, primary care to urgent care, and much more. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, are a good fit for any medical need you may have, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made with ZocDoc also happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking. You can even score same-day appointments. So do yourself a favor, stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/detective to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/detective. One more time, ZocDoc.com/detective. Okay, we're back. And before the break, I was talking about Detective Hudson and how he knew they had to go back and search the drainage system at Shalimar Park more thoroughly. And on May 22nd, 2018, nearly 2.5 years after Ebby disappeared, that search finally happened. Now, for those of you who aren't watching on YouTube, I'm going to do my best to explain what it looked like, but I will tell you, there's no substitute for the actual video, and there's some really good videos out there. But for the people on audio, so the drainage system near where Ebby's car was found is the type where it's like this slim rectangular concrete drain at the street level, like on the curb. And I think a lot of us in whatever part of the country you're in, we all have those sewer drains. The best way I would describe it, I'm being a little juvenile here, is you've seen the movie It, right? Where, you know, George, if you've seen the movie George, I don't want to spoil it. You know what happens to George, and it happens in one of these type of sewer drains where the clown pops up. If you know what I'm talking about, then you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, you're not missing anything, because I will tell you, I saw it when I was young, and I would purposely ride around these sewer drains when I was on my bike because I was petrified. But that's a different story for a different day. So in addition to this sewer drain that you had along the curb, there was a manhole cover above it that leads to this like vertical opening. And it's definitely wide enough for a person to kind of climb down the ladder and then stand in it. And I would estimate that when you open the manhole cover and you go down the ladder, it's probably around 8 to 10 feet. That's my approximate guess based on some of the videos that I've seen. And from there, there's this offshoot at the very bottom that branches off into a smaller pipe. And that's roughly, again, just from the videos I've seen, I would say 1 foot tall, maybe a little bit more, but not much. And you guys heard me mention Catherine Townsend earlier. And when I talked about her, I talked about her as a podcaster and investigative journalist. She's also a friend. And I can tell you that she's very thorough, and she gets really into these cases, and she's motivated by finding answers. And if you go watch the video, she actually crawls down into this manhole. She takes the manhole cover off. She goes down inside this area where you can definitely stretch her arms out, and it's like 8 to 10 feet. And then you can see this little pipe drain, and I'm thinking she's just going to describe it and she's going to go back up. Nope. She lays down with her phone and tries to crawl in this pipe. And I got to tell you, I'm claustrophobic. I love you guys. I would do my best to solve your cases. I'm not crawling in that drain pipe. And when she tries to do it, and she's a very slim woman, I don't think she would mind me saying that, she can't. She can't even fit in there. She almost gets stuck. So keep that in mind as we go forward, because to me, it was very compelling to see someone that I personally know, and I know their size, to see them down in this area to try to crawl into that pipe. It would be very difficult to do so. And obviously, because this pipe was so narrow, the police couldn't search it either. So they sent a camera in there, and about 70 feet in, they found an obstruction. Believing that they had found something big, Hudson and his team brought in a bulldozer to clear the blockage. According to NBC News, when the bulldozer pulled up the debris, Hudson saw skeletal remains right in front of him. He immediately knew they were Ebby's, and testing would soon confirm it. After 2.5 long years, Ebby's family now knew where she was, but they were left with even more questions. How did she end up in the drainage system, and how did she die? To this day, The autopsy results have not been publicly released. However, her case continues to be investigated as a homicide. Now, Detective Hudson later told Dateline that he doesn't want Ebby's cause of death shared publicly because it could interfere with an ongoing investigation. So let's talk about this unfortunate discovery for a moment, because it's a problem on multiple fronts. From an evidentiary standpoint, her body was badly decomposed by the time she was found. If she had been found initially when she went missing, there would have been a lot more evidence there. And I know at this point Hudson is saying, I don't want to release her cause of death, but I'm always going to be honest with you guys. And I'm concerned that they don't know the cause of death, and that's why they haven't released it. I hope I'm wrong, but as I'm sitting here right now with you, it's a really strong possibility. And that could be because of how badly decomposed her body was when it was eventually found. If they had found it initially, that would not have been a concern. Then there's the emotional side to this case, where Ebby's family for 2.5 years was wondering what happened to her. And the answer was right there. It was right there. And yet for 2.5 long years, they had to wonder if she was dead. Was she alive? Was she hurt? Did she need their help? Was she right down the road, or was she across the country? No answers. And if there had been more proactiveness, think about this manhole cover right next to the car. You would have thought someone would have said, hey, maybe we should open that up, even before the smell of decomposition. I know me, if I'm sitting there and I'm looking at this crime scene, just out of curiosity, I'm going to open that manhole cover just to see what's down there. Could be her. Could be someone who's involved in the crime who didn't have time to get away and hid in the manhole hoping that we were just going to leave. There's a million reasons why you would open that cover and no reason not to. So it's extremely frustrating for me to sit here and talk about this because I shouldn't have to explain it. If it was done initially, maybe I'm not sitting here right now covering this case. Maybe the people responsible for what happened to Ebby are already in prison. And yet, here I am trying to explain to you guys how this happened when there's really no justifiable excuse. That's all I can say. Hudson did the best he could. He actually did a great job coming back in. Thank God he did, because if not for him, we still may not know what happened to Ebby. But I don't want to get too much on a tangent. I just wanted to give my 2 cents on this, because at the end of the day, I'm a parent just like some of you guys, and I can't imagine finding out that my child was right at the crime scene the whole time. Furious. I would want nothing to do with that police department. So we now have Ebby, and we've answered one part of this mystery, and that's, where is she? Unfortunately, she's no longer with us, and now the investigation transitions to who killed her. But just a year after Ebby was found, her family was dealt another devastating blow. Trevor, Ebby's older brother, passed away from a heart attack at just 35 years old. The pain of losing his sister and learning she had been so close all along really took a toll on him. And this is just what I was referring to. Yes, there's an investigatory process that's affected by not finding her. Evidence is lost. But most importantly, the family every day, every second is thinking about her and where she is. And then to find out that she was right literally under their feet, think about the effect that can have on you. So here's Ebby's family, lost one person, and now they've lost another, all from this one tragedy. And it's a damn shame. And yeah, I'm going hard on the police department, but who I'm really thinking about is the people responsible for what happened to Ebby. And that's why we got to find them. So the investigation continued, but still there were no arrests. And in October of 2021, Detective Hudson told Dateline that they had identified persons of interest and had conducted multiple interviews, but no one had been named a suspect and no other details were provided. Then in March of 2022, Catherine Townsend, who I've mentioned multiple times in this episode, released a long-form podcast series about Ebby's case. It was part of her show, Hell and Gone, and it focused on what was uncovered while digging into the circumstances surrounding Ebby's disappearance and death. Now, many of Townsend's findings have already been covered in this episode, but there was one thing we haven't touched on yet. In the series, Townsend looked closer at the park security guard, Guy Hooper. Now, according to Townsend, there were inconsistencies in his story. She tried to verify Hooper's claim that he had filed a police report after finding Ebby's car on the 25th, but what she found was that either the report was never filed, or if it had been, it had somehow disappeared from the system. There was also another issue. Hooper had told Vickers that the car was parked toward the front of the park in plain view of the road, but according to media reports, Ebby's family, and Townsend's own investigation, that simply wasn't true. The car had been backed into a space in the park's rear parking lot, right next to the drainage pipe like I had described earlier. Okay, let's break this down because personally, I love this. I love that Townsend is thinking outside the box. She's not accusing Hooper of anything, but when you're trying to figure out what happened, you have to explore all possibilities. And if this wasn't already done, if law enforcement just assumed that Hooper was telling the truth, that's a mistake. You have to vet everything. So let's break down what she's actually talking about here. First, let's start with the police report that was filed about the abandoned car. She's saying there's no account for it. He's saying that he did it. Let's think about who we're talking about here. First off, Hooper, he's an older guy. I will say that. He's an older guy. I looked into him. Not going to put too much personal information out there, but he is an older gentleman. Could he get his facts wrong and still be innocent in this whole thing? Of course. But I also want to point out, which this won't be a surprise to any of you, if I told you that Hooper did call it in, and the same police department who did such a poor job on this whole investigation didn't actually file a report, didn't put it on paper, didn't look into it, and maybe just said, yeah, sure, buddy, we'll take a look at it, we'll make a note of it, and just hung up the phone and kept going on throughout their day, would that be a shock to you? Would that be a complete surprise? I don't think so. So is it possible that Hooper's telling the truth and then the person on the other end, whether it was a dispatcher or a police officer, basically gave him some lip service and didn't file anything? Absolutely. That's definitely possible. The second part to this, where he misidentifies where the vehicle was located, if we're to believe all the other sources, then that means he's got it wrong. If he was involved, I would believe he'd be more accurate because he would have been in the mix. He would have known exactly what happened and where it happened. So I don't necessarily think this means he's involved or that this incriminates him. It could be just an honest mistake. And I talk about witnesses all the time. What do I always say to them? Don't tell me what you think. Tell me what you know. I've personally been involved in traumatic situations where I have an account of what happened and I'm wrong. It's not intentional, but in that moment, I got tunnel vision on something else and I misspoke or I misremembered something. It's an honest mistake. It happens all the time. But either way, I am truly glad that people like Catherine are out there and that they're doing this because she's trying to look at what hasn't been done because she knows where we are. We have an unsolved case. So the question is why? Why haven't we got the answers yet? Maybe that's because we're not looking in the right place. So I love what Catherine's doing here, and I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit, but that's also important. You don't want like-minded people all coming to the same conclusion. You want to have a healthy debate because that's the only way you're going to find the truth. So let's fast forward to May of 2022 when Ebby's family appeared on the Dr. Phil show to share her story with a national audience. This was also the first time Ebby's boyfriend, Eric, spoke publicly about what happened the night she disappeared. Now, during this interview, Eric revealed that Ebby had actually come by his house that evening as well. She was upset, but she didn't seem impaired. He said, quote, "She just wasn't her normal self, like that was gone. It wasn't even a sense of urgency, just like she knew something was about to happen. She almost knew she wasn't going to be okay." Eric said that later that evening, after she left, he heard from Ebby's family who told him that they weren't able to reach her, and that's when he made that call, and as I said earlier, she answered, but something seemed off, she sounded, quote, weird, and that's when the call ended abruptly, and that was the last time he had ever spoke to her, according to him. Catherine Townsend also appeared on the episode, and during her segment, she discussed various theories about what might have happened to Ebby, including one theory from law enforcement suggesting that Ebby may have entered the drainage pipe herself and died by suicide. Now, before you blow a gasket, because I know you're going crazy right now when I say that, yes, this may seem like it's a completely far-fetched theory, but remember, I said it earlier in the episode, Ebby did tell her friend that she was going to kill herself shortly before she dropped off the radar. So, from an investigatory standpoint, this angle has to be investigated, even if it's just to officially rule it out. So yes, law enforcement is putting out crazy theories. It may piss you off, but this is what they should be doing for everyone, which is why I went back to Guy Hooper and Catherine Townsend. You have to explore all angles, even if they're unlikely, just so you can mark them off the list. And speaking of Townsend, I mentioned this whole video that she did earlier where she goes out to Chelamont Park and she actually gets inside this manhole cover. And I talked a lot about it already, so I won't go back too much, but I will say something that I didn't mention earlier that she brought up. This manhole cover that you have to pull off, it's very heavy. If anyone's seen a manhole cover, if you tried to lift it, it's a tough thing to do. It's possible, but it's difficult. So she pulls the manhole cover off, and then she gets down in the ladder, and she mentions that there's no way she could have closed the manhole cover behind her. It's too much. There's no leverage there. You're on this ladder. You're kind of hanging over. It would have been very difficult to use one arm to drag the manhole cover back over you and have it fall in place. So to me, that would suggest it was another person, because we know that when law enforcement and security arrived, that manhole cover was closed. And after this whole experiment, Townsend came to the conclusion that there was no way Ebby ended up 70 feet into this pipe voluntarily or accidentally. And I completely agree. And I'm not the only one, because Detective Hudson appears to agree as well. He provided a written statement to Dr. Phil saying he believes someone was with Ebby when she was placed in the drain pipe and that he believes the person responsible lives in Little Rock. Okay, so let's fast forward again to 2024. The investigation is still underway, it's still ongoing, and Lori shared a significant update with True Crime News. She revealed that there is DNA evidence in Ebby's case, though she didn't specify what type of DNA it was or where it was found. She said the evidence had been sent out for testing and expressed hope, especially after seeing another Arkansas cold case solved, that case being the abduction and murder of Morgan Nick. The next development came just a few weeks ago in May of 2025, when Arkansas Attorney General Tim Griffin announced the formation of a new cold case unit within his office. According to the Arkansas Democrat, the unit is staffed with two former homicide investigators working full-time. That's unlike many local departments where cold cases are often handled on a part-time basis, and I can concur, usually these guys are getting together after work or on the weekends in addition to other jobs they do, and they're not doing it every day of the week. So to have a full-time unit who's specifically working on cold cases, that's a big deal. And one of the cases this new full-time unit is focusing on is Ebby's. Lori told THV11 that she knows and trusts several of the investigators involved and feels optimistic that the unit may finally bring the answers they've waited nearly a decade to find. As of this recording, that is the most recent update in Ebby's case. No one has been ruled out, and her family hopes for a major break in the investigation very soon.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing?
They're also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, let's dive into this perspective. I know it was a long episode. Thank you for sticking with me. Again, there was a lot of information. I wanted to make sure that I covered it all. So I'm going to talk about some things I mentioned in the episode, but I'm also going to talk about where we can go from here. So the first thing I want to discuss is the condition of Ebby's body, when she was found, and where she was found. I've given a couple theories from Catherine and law enforcement. I want to give my own. I personally believe that she was either killed in her car or killed somewhere near her car. And the people responsible, whether it was one person or more, they removed the manhole cover. And let me just describe this area again, because I think it's important. You have the manhole cover, and then you have this cylindrical area that's probably 8 to 10 feet deep and maybe 4 to 5 feet wide. You could fit multiple people down there. It's large. And then you have this little pipe that's only a foot wide that she was found in, 70 feet in. So what I believed happened is the person or people pull the manhole cover off after she's already dead or incapacitated. They dump Ebby's body down into this area. They replace the manhole cover, and then they get out of there. And maybe Ebby's car is left running at that point, and that's why it runs out of gas. So now she's down in this hole, and over time, as her body decomposes, you're losing connective tissue and skin, and so her body shrinks and becomes more flexible, more malleable, easier to fit into smaller locations. And then you have the drainage, the flushing of this water, which I believe eventually picks up the remaining parts of her body and washes it into this smaller drain pipe. And eventually, as it gets 70 feet in, it gets stuck, and that's where it stays. That's how I believe her body got there after seeing Catherine's video. I do not think she crawled in there intentionally or accidentally. I think she was incapacitated or already dead when she was in that larger area, and it wasn't until her body shrunk down that she washed into that smaller drain pipe. That's my opinion. So if I'm right, and this is what happened, and this is where it all went down, what does this tell us about the suspect and what may have happened that night? As far as the suspect, it does suggest a familiarity, not only with the town, but with that particular park. They know the layout. They know who's there, who's not going to be there, and they may have had some encounters with security staff in the past, and they realize that they're not up to snuff. They're old-timers who are maybe working part-time, collecting a second paycheck, and they're not really high-speed. They're not on the ball when it comes to checking areas, and based on previous encounters, potentially, they understand who they're dealing with and what they can get away with. As far as the actual crime, we have the ignition in the on position, and it appears that the battery was dead and the car had ran out of gas, which suggests to me, just based on my own anecdotal experience as a younger adult, if I was in the car with someone, it's cold out or whatever, I would leave the car running. And then when we were done hanging out, we would go our separate ways. My belief is that Ebby met someone there, more than likely, or someone drove with her. Both are possible. And that individual had a conversation with Ebby. And maybe it was to try to work things out at first, but when Ebby, who had already threatened to go to the police, told this individual that she was going to turn him or his friends in, he didn't like it. And at that point, he decided to act because he knew he had to shut her up. And I want to qualify, that's if the people who are involved with the alleged assault are also involved with her murder. There's a possibility they're not. There's also a possibility that this person, whoever it was, is somehow connected to these individuals, heard about what was going on, and met her at this location to discuss it, and knowing all along they were going to kill her because they couldn't have her out there talking about this because it could potentially involve an arrest and the loss of their freedom. So they decided to get in front of it before she had a chance to go to police. There's also another theory that I haven't heard discussed a lot, and it is somewhat in line with what Catherine has suggested. Is it possible that Ebby, knowing this area, had a familiarity with it, felt safe there, went there on her own and was working out some things, maybe drinking, maybe doing something. I don't want to speculate too much. And while she was there in this emotional state, someone approached her, someone that she didn't know, maybe someone who appeared to be in a position of authority, a security guard, a police officer, etc. They see this woman alone, they see her in a vulnerable state, and they are already approaching the situation with nefarious intentions. They take advantage of the situation, they get the drop on her, and everything else transpires the way I had described earlier. Both theories are plausible. If you're sitting here asking me, the likelihood of some serial killer being in this park at the same time as Ebby is very unlikely. With everything going on in her life and the timeline in which it occurred, it is very suggestive that someone who had an axe to grind with her or someone who felt she was a liability would be involved in whatever happened to her. Again, everyone has the right to, you know, a due process and has the right to be considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. But I have to be straightforward with you guys. We have to be honest about this. The fact that this woman more than likely was killed shortly after allegedly being raped and then threatening to expose her attackers, it's very coincidental to me. And I think it's something that needs to be investigated a lot more thoroughly than it already has. I don't care what they've done. We need to go back and do it again. So what would that entail? Well, it involves a few things. We got to go back and re-interview family members, friends, and associates. Like I said earlier in the episode, maybe there's information of other things that were going on in Ebby's life that involve other people who we're not aware of, who may also have a problem with Ebby, who may also consider her a liability. So we got to go back, we got to dot those I's and cross those T's. Then, if it's not obvious already what I'm alluding to, we need to go back and re-interview the four male individuals who allegedly assaulted Ebby. They need to be interviewed with their lawyers. They need to be investigated thoroughly, not only their criminal histories before this incident, but since this incident. We need to look into their alibis and see if there's any inconsistencies in where they were on the night in question. If I had to guess just from my own experience, more than likely they're going to say they were together. We have to see what we can do to dive into that to ensure that was actually the case. Maybe they've spoke to people since then. That's why we need to talk to their associates and their friends as well. In addition to all that, we need to go back and relook at all the video footage and phone records that we have. Yes, I'm sure they've been looked at before, but a fresh perspective with a new set of eyes may see something that was missed the first time someone went over it. And then lastly, and probably most importantly, it's the DNA. I don't know what they have. I'm assuming that swabs were taken inside the vehicle, and that's what they're processing now. If they're able to find DNA from people other than Ebby, they need to try to identify them, whether it's through investigative genetic genealogy or getting search warrants for people who are persons of interest. Either way, we have to identify every DNA profile that's found in that car, and if we haven't already spoke to them, we need to go speak to them now. And if they have been questioned before, we need to go back to them and see if they can explain why their DNA was found in her car. And if they can't, well, then they got a problem. And there's also a possibility that someone out there right now who has not been spoken to by police, but has a direct or indirect connection to this case, knows something that they have not disclosed up to this point for whatever reason. I'm here to tell you that it's not too late. And maybe you have information that's important and you don't even know it. So just to recap, on Friday, October 23rd, 2015, Ebby Stepik attended a party. Afterward, she told friends and family that she had been sexually assaulted and the incident may have been recorded on video without her consent. The following day, she planned to report the assault to police, but then she disappeared. For nearly 24 hours, no one could reach her. Then on Sunday, October 25th, Ebby called her brother and she sounded disoriented and claimed that she was outside his house, but she was wrong. When he called her back, she said she was in her car, which was a silver Volkswagen Passat, but she didn't know where she was. That call was the last time anyone in her family ever heard from her. Ebby's car was later found abandoned in Chalamont Park. Her phone, wallet, and contact lenses were also inside the vehicle, but Ebby was nowhere to be found. In May of 2018, Ebby's remains were recovered from a drainage pipe just feet away from where her car had been found. Her death is being investigated as a homicide, so if you have any information about the death of Ebby Stepik, please contact the Little Rock Police Department at 501 877-371-4660. My final words, as always, go out to Lori and Ebby's friends and family. I know that this case has taken an emotional toll on all of you. I mean, you've lost loved ones because of it. And I'm here to tell you that your journey may just be getting started. And that's a good thing because you have hope. There's new evidence involving DNA that has solved numerous other cases and may help solve yours. This piece of evidence may finally give you a face to the person responsible for what happened to Ebby. You may finally get the justice you all deserve. And we're here with you until that day comes. And I would love nothing more than to sit right here and let everyone know that the person, the monster, responsible for what happened to Ebby is finally being held accountable. Until that day comes, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.